This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Coming up, Tom Scheck has details of President Obama's visit to the Twin Cities. Tim Nelson updates us on the flood situation. The Green Line hits its mark while another proposed light rail line hits another snag. It's Thursday, June 26th. I'm John Wanamaker. President Obama begins a two-day trip to Minneapolis today. The president is scheduled to hold a town hall-style meeting this afternoon at Minnehaha Falls and attend a fundraiser later for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Arm. He will also deliver a speech at the Lake Harriet Bandshell on Friday. The visit comes just months before the midterm elections. Tom Scheck reports on the political implications of the trip.
Both Democrats and Republicans say they're excited President Obama is visiting Minnesota this week, but for dramatically different reasons. DFL Party Chair Ken Martin says the visit will help excite members of his party.
There's no one in this country that can excite Democrats more than President Barack Obama.
Martin says the visit will pay off for several reasons. The high-dollar private fundraiser will help congressional candidates in Minnesota and across the country. But he says it will also help motivate rank-and-file DFLers to vote in November. Martin says he expects the president to talk about Minnesota's minimum wage increase and the Women's Economic Security Act, passed by the DFL-controlled legislature and signed into law by Governor Dayton earlier this year. Democrats hailed those initiatives as ways to improve the lives of working families and working women. Martin says having the president talk about similar issues will remind women, in particular younger unmarried women, which political party is defending their interests.
There's no doubt, though, that as we head into the election, and women are obviously a very important part of our electorate, and we want to remind them exactly what we've been able to help do to improve their lives and to make it easier for them to be paid what they're worth in the workplace.
But Republicans say Obama's visit will be a boon to their candidates. Obama's poll numbers are sinking, and many Americans think the country is headed in the wrong direction. Marty Seifert is one of the four Republican candidates running for governor against Mark Dayton. He says many Minnesotans have heard plenty from Obama without action to back it up.
I had the misfortune or fortune of being minority leader back in 2008 when he was first elected, and I knew how wildly popular he was in the state of Minnesota back in 2008. That is not the case anymore. I think the president is as much of a liability as he is an asset for the Democrats in Minnesota this year.
Republican U.S. Senate candidate Mike McFadden has already tried to tie the president's policies to DFL Senator Al Franken. McFadden is using Obama's visit to highlight the national economy, which he says has not shown any significant growth over the past 6 years.
This has been the worst recovery to a recession in the history of the United States, and I don't think the administration or Senator Franken have done anything to help the economy. In fact, I think they're causing the economy not to grow because they continue to put regulation after regulation on it.
McFadden says to create jobs, the country needs lower energy prices, which he says would come with faster approval of pipelines and liquefied natural gas plants. On the minimum wage, McFadden says he'd prefer an increase in the earned income tax credit to a higher minimum wage. Franken is supporting a minimum wage increase and says he's introduced legislation designed to improve the economy, such as spending more for job training and lowering the cost of college. Franken's staff said he wasn't available for an interview, but they say Franken will travel to Minnesota on Air Force One and attend both events with the president. Franken said last month that he wouldn't shy away from appearing with Obama, even though they disagree on issues, including the medical device tax, ethanol, and corporate mergers.
There are plenty of places where I have differences with him. I would certainly welcome him to the state and the campaign for me.
Senator Amy Klobuchar says she too will fly on Air Force One with Obama from Washington to Minneapolis and talk with him about flooding in the state. She will attend both events. And Governor Dayton says he will be glad to appear with the president during his visit to Minneapolis. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Rivers are continuing to crest through central Minnesota as the runoff from last week's storms moves through the region. Tim Nelson has the latest.
Gauges show the Minnesota River may have crested this morning at Savage, about a foot above what's considered major flood stage. The Mississippi River is still headed for its forecast peak in St. Paul, likely sometime tomorrow. The crest is expected to be the seventh highest flood on record and more than a foot above the most recent major floods in 2010 and 2011. The St. Croix River at Stillwater is also still rising, but is expected to crest over the weekend. The National Weather Service scaled back its forecast for storms in central Minnesota to less than 2 inches of precipitation through Monday for most of the state, although rainfall could hit 3 inches in the southwestern corner. Along the Canadian border, both Rainy Lake and Lake of the Woods are expected to rise another 6 inches in the next week. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
In the first week of service, the new Green Line Light Rail hit its daily ridership projections. Laura Ewan has the numbers.
Metro Transit predicted that the new LRT route connecting St. Paul to Minneapolis would draw 27,500 rides per weekday by 2015. Last week, the Green Line attracted slightly more rides, averaging a weekday ridership of 27,800. That figure doesn't include the free rides offered during the opening weekend festivities. Metro Transit General Manager Brian Lamb is encouraged by the numbers. He says the agency will get a clearer sense of everyday use once class resumes in the fall at the University of Minnesota. More than a quarter of the Green Line's boardings are expected to come from the three U stops. And just as the early models predicted, the busiest stations along the 11-mile route were Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis, the East Bank at the U, and Snelling Avenue in St. Paul. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Al, the news not all rosy on the light rail front. Curtis Gilbert reports that Minneapolis residents concerned about the proposed Southwest light rail line are hiring lawyers as the city nears a vote on the controversial project.
Mayor Betsy Hodges has received at least two letters this week from lawyers representing groups based in the city's Kenwood neighborhood. One came from a condominium association concerned its buildings could be damaged by light rail construction. The group had previously supported the proposal to bury the trains in shallow tunnels, but now it wants more information. Lawyers for another group, calling itself the Lakes and Parks Alliance of Minneapolis, have also sent a letter. They argue the Metropolitan Council is legally required to do additional environmental review before the city votes. The Met Council disputes that interpretation, and it pledged to work with the condo owners to address their concerns. The council and the city are negotiating in private with the help of a mediator. They face a July 14th deadline. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News.
General Mills has announced a new push to cut costs as the maker of Cheerios and Yoplait reported a sales decline in its latest quarter. The Golden Valley-based company has been struggling to boost its cereal and yogurt sales amid stiff competition. Don Mulligan is the company's chief financial officer.
We've begun a formal review of our North American manufacturing and distribution network with the goals of streamlining operations and identifying potential capacity reductions. And we've initiated efforts focused on further reducing overhead costs.
For the quarter, General Mills earned $405 million. That was an increase of about 11% over the same period a year ago. Sales fell about 3% to $4.3 billion. General Mills' share price dropped after the earnings announcement by as much as 4%. The FAA wants companies that sell drones to do a better job of educating pilots about safety. Jim Williams heads the FAA's unmanned aircraft program and spoke at a conference in Grand Forks. He says in the past, model aircraft pilots learned to fly safely in clubs.
The problem is now you can go onto Amazon and order a fully functional aircraft that comes out of the box ready to go. And so you don't have that community, that teaching, that understanding, and that attachment to the aircraft that would help you be a safe modeler.
Williams wants companies that sell small unmanned aircraft to include safety information in the packaging. Williams says in recent months there's been an increase in pilot complaints about small drones flying close to airports. The FAA expects to release new rules for small drones early next year. This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. The Export-Import Bank of the United States is one of many government agencies that toils away in obscurity. The bank supports American exports overseas by offering loan guarantees and insurance. It says it's backed $2 billion worth of exports from Minnesota companies since 2007, but now some Republicans say it's time to shutter the bank. Brett Neely has more.
The Ex-Im Bank, as it's called, used to be so non-controversial that whenever Congress had to vote to reauthorize the bank for another few years, it would pass unanimously. But as congressional Republicans have gotten more conservative, the bank has come under their scrutiny. And with the bank's current authorization set to expire at the end of September, its future is uncertain. Texas Republican Jeb Hensarling chairs the House Financial Services Committee, which held a hearing on the bank today. Hensarling charges that the Export-Import Bank is nothing more than another misguided government program.
So who benefits? Overwhelmingly and indisputably, it's some of the largest, richest, most politically connected corporations in the world.
Fred Hochberg, the chairman of the Exim Bank, says the bank is needed because American companies compete against foreign firms that get similar support from their governments.
Countries like China and Russia frequently engage in market-distorting financing that threatens U.S. workers and their jobs.
That argument didn't sit well with 6th District Republican Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who's a member of the Financial Services Committee.
To continue that logic means that nations of the world have to continue one-upsmanship on subsidy. And so it's subsidy versus subsidy, and it's a complete rejection of the free market. I don't think that's the direction we want to go.
One thing the bank probably won't do is add to the government's deficit. The bank charges for its services and returns more than $1 billion to the Treasury every year. According to the bank's statistics, 171 Minnesota companies have used its various programs since 2007. The beneficiaries range from CHS, the giant agribusiness cooperative whose customers sometimes use Ex-Im Bank financing, to smaller firms such as Turfco, a company based in Blaine that makes equipment for maintaining golf courses. George Kincaid is Turfco's president and co-owner and was an Ex-Im Bank customer until last year.
When I started up, you know, back in the 80s and 90s when I was doing this, first starting to use these programs, it had a big deal. And although we're small and only have 65 employees, the exporting business supports a portion of our employment.
Turfco used a program that insured its overseas deals so that if a buyer didn't pay up, the company would still get its money. Kincaid says that program made it much easier to make deals in countries such as China, where golf is becoming a popular sport.
So it was a very big negotiating technique to be able to have that credit insurance.
There are stories like Turfco's in every state. And the debate over the Ex-Im Bank has exposed a deep rift within the Republican Party between those who want to support the business community and those who think the government should do less. Business organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce are frantically lobbying members to save the bank, while conservative groups such as the Club for Growth are calling on members to shut its doors. At the hearing, Republican Stephen Fincher from Tennessee worried about the kinds of conversations he'd have with voters if the bank closes.
Well, Congressman, the only thing that you've done is you've got rid of an investment that was creating 1,000 jobs in our district. And now I'm on unemployment. I don't have a job.
Democrats, including Minneapolis Congressman Keith Ellison, have vowed to mount an all-out defense of the bank.
It's just a shame. It's just more evidence that, you know, these guys are hostile to the government and hostile to the services it provides to regular people.
It seems that if the bank survives, big changes will likely be in store. Turfco stopped using the Ex-Im Bank last year after it found insurance on the private market. George Kincaid says there's no way the company would have gotten that insurance when it first started exporting, so he's grateful for the bank's help. But he also says that once companies build their export business, maybe they don't need any more help from the government. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says it will look at whether Minnesota's largest coal-fired power plant needs more pollution controls. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
The EPA's move comes 5 years after the National Park Service said pollution from Xcel Energy's Sherco plant was contributing to haze at Voyageurs and Isle Royale National Parks and the Boundary Waters. Environmental groups had urged the EPA to act on that finding, and now EPA officials say they will. Kevin Ruther of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy says the decision raises further questions about the future of the plant's two 70s-era generators.
This is one more indicator that Xcel really needs to make a plan on what to do with those two older units at Sherco. We're getting a lot of our power from them now. They are very dirty old units. They're going to need to be cleaned up one way or the other.
Xcel Energy has said it plans to study Sherco's future as part of its regulatory requirements next year. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Canada's ambassador to the U.S. says pipelines, not rail cars, are the most efficient and environmentally responsible way to move Canadian oil to and through the U.S. Martin Moylan has more.
In a speech at the U of M's Carlson School of Management, Ambassador Gary Dewar lamented that much of Canada's oil entering the U.S. moves on rail cars. He said trains are more polluting and costly than pipelines. In addition, Dewar says moving oil on railroads leaves less capacity for grain and minerals.
More oil is coming down to the United States. The problem we see is how it's getting there. It's become a big controversy about pipelines. And if pipelines are delayed, the oil will be on rail.
North Dakota is producing 1 million barrels of oil per day. That plus surging production in Canada is driving new pipeline projects in Minnesota and several other states. But critics are concerned about possible spills where pipelines cross lakes and rivers. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Organizers of the Taste of Minnesota scrambled to find a new location after flooding forced the Food and Music Festival to move from Harriet Island in St. Paul. Taste will be held at the Carver County Fairgrounds in Waconia July 3rd through the 6th. Linda Maddox is general manager of Taste of Minnesota. She says other locations didn't work out because the permit process was either too long or the locations weren't quite right for other reasons. But Maddox says Taste may draw new audiences in its West Metro location.
And I guess the people that are lost from the east side of the metro area, there'll be new people that have never been to Taste that will be coming this year from the western suburbs.
Maddox says she expects many of the food vendors and all of the entertainment will be at the Carver County location, and she says there shouldn't be flooding problems there. A group concerned about bees says too many retailers are selling garden plants treated with harmful insecticides. Friends of the Earth has released a study that says half of the garden plants the group purchased at 18 different locations in the U.S. and Canada this spring contain neonicotinoids. They're a class of insecticides that can kill bees. The plants came from Lowe's, Walmart, and the Home Depot, including a Home Depot in Minnesota. Lex Horan is a spokesperson for the Pesticide Network. She says the group hopes the retailers will make changes.
We think that they have a really great opportunity right now to help change the whole supply chain by removing neonicotinoids from their shelves and ensuring that the plants that they sell don't come pre-treated with those insecticides.
Home Depot officials say their suppliers will be required to label plants treated with neonicotinoids later this year. A new Minnesota law prohibits retailers from labeling plants as bee-friendly if they are pre-treated with harmful insecticides. And finally, the executive director of the Minnesota Film and Television Board says there are now plans for more than 20 film and video projects in the state as a result of the renewed Snowbait subsidy program. The program refunds a percentage of filmmakers' costs. Lucinda Winter says while she's negotiating for some large productions, smaller projects often produce more local jobs. She says small film companies don't always have their own equipment and all the personnel they need, so they look locally for support.
Rent stuff here, not drive it in, get their cameras here, get their grip trucks here, get their rental vans here, all of that, because money's tight enough that they want to maximize their incentives and they want to do as much locally as they can because it's cheaper.
Winter revealed plans for a drama called Bloodstripe. It's about a female veteran returning to Minnesota after tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Shooting will begin August around Lake Vermilion in northern Minnesota. And that's the NPR News Update for Thursday, June 26th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.